Before Chaim is buying us all pizza. Before Chaim, it's
lunch.
Richard. Oh yeah, pizza for lunch.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, in Israel they used to have meat for lunch.
Yeah.
Now they start having milk. There's an American yeshiva
supper.
Now.
No,
a special supper. Didn't that one have me twice? The one that got.
You know, there was another famous Jew who had a special supper. It was his last, but I guess somebody already mentioned that. Anyway, I don't believe neither. I promise not to make any more Christian references for the next 2 or 3 minutes. The Talmud is made up. Do you mind maybe? Can you just close the door? The Talmud is broken up. It's an old trick. The Talmud is broken up into two categories, two sections. One is halacha, and one is agada. We all know that. Everybody here is learning Talmud. You learn the Ellis Kolo Talmud? So, he was in Kolo the last 2 years. So, we learned halacha and agada. Now, what is halacha? Halacha is the law. Formalistic things that you have to do it this way, and you can't do it that way. And this is mutter, and this is aser. And in Ksubis, you have mostly halacha gemaras, psula nesis liyom arvi, and almana biyom hachamishi, etc., etc. When you get married, what happens if she's a Pesach Basuach? What happens if the basin sits every day? What happens? All of these are all halacha gemaras. What time you have to daven, etc., etc., etc. Now, there's another part of the gemara, which is called agada. Now, agada, this is what halacha, what does the word halacha mean? So, halacha means to walk. Because when you in your life, you're supposed to walk with it. Wherever you go, the halacha is supposed to go with you. That's halacha. Now, agada is defined by Rav Nissen Gaon. If you look at the end of Maseches Brachos, the end of Maseches Brachos is a little like rules of the of Gemara. You read that, Rav Yosef?
I've tried.
You've tried. It's Kedai.
I want to.
At the end of Maseches Brachos, all these important rules. So there he defines what Agada is. So he says Agada, Agadata, which maybe you know as Agadata, is anything that's not halacha. There you have it. Halacha, you know, is law. Anything Gemara which isn't law is going to be called Agadata. So what is generally Agadata there for? So it can be compared to the human body. The human body is composed of body and soul. So in the Gemara, the body of the Gemara is halacha. The soul of the Gemara is agada. Now, I think my 2 or 3 minutes are up, so we can start talking about Christianity again. In Christianity, there's a big stress on agada, on feeling. I believe, right? You can basically, I mean, as long as you know the right priest, you can do almost anything you want. And as long as you believe in God, you know, you could be a professional football player or a baseball player. You can put somebody in a wheelchair. I just saw a professional baseball player. You could put somebody in a wheelchair. You know, you can spend your whole life, you know, you can have 150 mistresses. But as long as you believe in God, you're safe. Whereas if you spend your whole life doing acts of kindness and love, let's say you're Rabbi Ari Levine, Rabbi Shetzadik, Rabbi Fala Levine, Rabbi Shmuel, right? One of these great tzaddikim, right? But you don't have the proper beliefs, so out of here, right? You get a one-way ticket downstairs where they turn up the heat after a lot of layers of clothing, and you're finished. Because all they have is the agadata, is the feeling. However, in Judaism, and that's really most religions are like that, most Eastern religions, also there's a lot of stress on spirituality and feeling. But when it comes to deed, they don't talk very much about deed. And certainly, nobody has as many laws. And we need laws. Because, for example, if a person says that one has to be honest. So what does honesty mean? Right? What is considered stealing? What is maybe, one second. If I'm working for a company, and the company has a billion dollar company. Right? And I take away $1 million. Nobody's going to ever hear about it. And I'm going to be able to feed people who are hungry. So maybe it's mutter to steal. Maybe. Right? We know there's a value in saving somebody's life. Right? But what about losing your own life to save somebody else's life? Right? In the outside world, it's looked at, oh, he's a hero. He's not necessarily a hero. Who says your friend's life is more important than your life? But you have to watch your own life. It's a machlokes haposkim. But these things aren't so simple. So all of these morals and ethics that they talk about in the outside world, they need law to define what to do. Right? We're Christians. If you ask them, I once sat with a bunch of non-Jews, they have no idea. Because, you know, who says what's the right thing to do and what's the wrong thing to do? Even if you hold there is such a thing as deed. But in general, their focus is going to be on spirituality. Now, we also, obviously, the Iker is one's lave. There's a book called Chobos HaLevavos. And Chobos HaLevavos talks about how most books are about Chobos HaYevarim, what your limbs have to do. What about your heart? It's the Agadatas for the heart. That's what Talmudic so to speak, stories, the non-halachic aspects of the Gemara are for? For a person's soul, for a person's feeling, for a person's ruchnias. So for a long, long time, you were considered a very big loser if you studied a Gadita. Because if you were a Talmud Chacham, you spent all day studying halacha. And if you couldn't, then, you know, they used to have chaburas for Ein Yaakov. Ein Yaakov is a book where they gather, he gathered all the nine halachic Gemaras. What?
Rabbi Yaakov
Ibn Chabib. How's that for a nice Arabic?
His
great-grandson
wrote the Ma'amloes.
What?
His great-grandson wrote the Ma'amloes.
And his great-grandson wrote the Ma'amloes. So if you ever want to know any bibliographic notes, you go see Rabbi Yosef. So he put a book together called... So he put a book together called... What was the name of the book? Ein Yaakov, thank you. And in this book, they put around Perushim on all of the stories of the Gemara. So for a long time, you can only learn that if you were, you know what I mean, third class, like the guys, you know, in high school. And when I was in high school, they had five shiurim. So the really smart guys were put in the first shiurim, the second shiurim, the third shiurim, the fourth shiurim, and the shiur I was in, right? So the those Ein Yaakov were for those guys. Our luck, they told us Baba Kama. But oxen and things like this, I would much rather have learned nice stories. But then came along Reb David Kram's grandfather, the Baal Shem Tov, and he said, hold on a minute. You can't, you know, people are putting too much stress on the externals. And whether you put your tefillin is exactly in the right spot, or whether, you know, on Shabbos, you know, what exactly is the gedder of Bor? They didn't start talking about Bor until 50 years ago, like they are today. But Lamaisa Borer, and all the malachas, and then Hilchas Tefillin, and the Zmanei Tefillin, you have to daven Bidyuk, it doesn't matter how you daven. As long as you say those words before 9:31 a.m., you're fine. Zman Tefillin, you made the Zman, that's it. So Baal Shem Tov said, everybody's forgetting about the heart. So in Chassidus, what they did was, is they started putting more stress on the lathe. And sometimes that came at the expense of halacha, of the limbs. So, it wasn't such a big deal. There weren't any serious ramifications, except for the fact that hundreds of thousands of people were put in chayrim. And people were reported to the authorities, and people were going to jail, people were sent to Siberia. A lot of wonderful, beautiful things were happening. That's how the Alter Rebbe, I'm sure you've heard, Chabad is a big holiday. What is it? What is it? Yud Tet Kislev. Right. It's a big holiday. The Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, was freed from jail. What was the Lubavitcher Rebbe in jail for? For scalping tickets at the Siyum for Daf Yomi at Madison Square Garden? Yes. No, there are other Hasidim who were in jail for scalping tickets at the Siyum Shas in Madison Square Garden. He was there because some people didn't like Hasidus, and they put him there. They put him there. They told the authorities on him. So that's what they did. Then came along the Muslim movement, not long after that. And they said the same thing. Rabbi Sol Salanter said, it's nice all of these halachas. It's very good that a person knows exactly what the halachas of Echves, stock are. Right? You know exactly how much you have to give, what is considered maisa, what is not considered maisa. What about the feeling? The pasuk says, pasoach tiftach yotcha. Right? Lo sikvots lov, lo sikpots yotcha, lo samitz levavcha. Do you know when you give tzedakah, and your heart, you're feeling, oh, I don't like giving, it's hard for me to part with this money. So you're mevatel a mitzvah daraisa. You have to give with an open heart. What about the feeling? So some people, they want to do the mitzvah of nachem asas orchim, so they invite the guy into their house. What about the smile? What about making him feel good? What about making him feel accepted? So all of these halachas, every halacha that there's law to, that they're externals, they're the internals also. And one without the other doesn't go. So in Musa, they also put a stress on halacha, that's why they weren't as much put in chayrin, although it did bring to fist fights and a lot of sinas chinam, but it wasn't as bad as what Chassidus, as what happened to the world when Chassidus came. Al-Kopanim, they began to stress the more agadic sections, the non-halachic sections. What is the word agadita mean, by the way? So there are a number of explanations. One of them is that the word agadita is milashon moshech, meshicha, when you're moshech, because it draws people. That's one thing agadita means. Another one is a kesher. You ever learn the Sefer Sukkah? It says, lulav tzarech eged. What's an eged? It's a bus company, a femeod. It's also a guy, you want to make fun of him, so you call him an egghead. Right? That's why the two bus companies say, Dan is an egghead. So in the lulav and esther, you have the four species. They're called, stand up for the mantle. Welcome, live, God lives. It means to connect. Lulav Tzarech Eged means that all of your four species have to be connected. That's what it means. When you take the Dalad Minim, that's why you get those little Koshikalach, you know those Koshikalach? You know those, that V-shaped thing that you put on your lulav and esrog, or you tie it up all beautifully. And then your lulav is eged. Eged means tie. Why? Because with the lulav is, A, it's moshech people, it draws people. And also, it's supposed to tie them. Who is it supposed to tie them to? It's supposed to tie them to the master in heaven. So just in case anybody thinks that it's a modern invention, that people started putting a stress on agadata, and it's becoming more and more popular in the last few hundred years, but there was already a chazal in Sifri. It says, Ritzoncha lahakir misha haya misha omar v'haya ha'olam. It says in the Sifri, in the Medrash, already we're talking time of the Tanoim. If you want to get to know the one who said and the world was created, otherwise known as God, as we find yourself right now in his front yard, yes? So, go learn Agadah. That's what it says. There are numerous chazals like that, that if you want to know God, if you want to be a real Jew, then you have to learn Agadah. Right? If you want the externals of Judaism, so to speak, you can learn Halach. It's very nice. But if you want to know about God, you want to know the Pnimius in Yanim, you want to have the feeling, so then you have to learn Agadah. Right? But again, one doesn't work without the other. If a person only has a body, and they don't have a soul, so they're really dry. Right? You go out with a girl. Right? She's mom, she's beautiful. You've never seen anything like it. Because you never look at girls. But, unfortunately, it's the summertime now, and you have to find your way to yeshiva. You don't know your way around here, so I'm going to see one, right? So she's never the most beautiful thing yet. So you spend 5 minutes with her. They always say to pretty, a lot of pretty, don't open your mouth, girls. Because the second she opens her mouth, all of a sudden you find out there's nothing else there, right? So she's only a goof, and she's no neshama. There's no neshama there. She's not fun to be with. She's no personality. She doesn't know how to have a good time. She doesn't, you know, have any ideas. She's just the external. It's not enough, right? On the other hand, you meet a girl, she's mamish the biggest tzedekis in the world. She's Down syndrome. She's only a neshama. She's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful neshama. But, you know what I mean? There's not so much else there, right? So even though there's all that purity, but you also want the externals. So, what's the most beautiful? The most beautiful is when you have the outside, you have a beautiful face, right? And you also have the inside, you also have the neshama, right? My daughter, incidentally, it's not for grabs. Seder, we're going to wait. She's 7 years old. We have many years to think, but you guys can look elsewhere. So even though you're all wonderful guys. So that is, as far as my daughter is concerned. So that is why you need both halacha and agadah. Now, what's the biggest raya out of this? The biggest raya is the Gemara itself. People are mezalzel in yeshivas, and the holy yeshivas, they skip when they get to it. You'll see also probably here. When you get to agadahs, and daf hey, there's some agadahs. Maybe you're ready to read through it, but chances are you skip it. Right, you can go from there. Right, we all know in school, if the teacher told us to read from page 1 to 22, and no, you shouldn't read from 22 to 30, just go from 30 to 40, so then you all of a sudden got interested in what's from 22 to 30, right? So therefore, you're going to skip it, people maybe are going to look, right? But that's what they do in most yeshivas. But the Gemara obviously didn't feel that way. Why? Because the Gemara put the halach and the agadah in the same place, in the same text, and they go, we've all done some Gemara in our lives, and you see how the Gemara goes from this to that, to this to that. Gemara, it doesn't even put it in different print. It just goes from this to that. Sometimes the mamash in the same suit. You say, what does this have to do with anything? Right? But that's the Gemara is teaching us a very, very important lesson. That it's not just enough to have halacha. That Haggadah is part of the halacha. Where else do you see this expressed? In the Torah. The Torah gives you halacha and it gives you stories. Stories are supposed to teach you how to live. So you see in the Torah itself. Right? What is the whole base? What is the whole foundation of our religion based on? Haggadah. Torah. What is Torah Misina? Torah Misinai isn't halachas. The halachas were what came out of Torah Misinai. They have to keep halacha. But the experience of perceiving God as much as a human being can on this planet Earth, that's agadata. That's feeling. That's emotion. So therefore, our entire religion, if you don't have Mamon Har Sinai, you don't have Judaism. So therefore, just the receiving the Torah at Sinai itself is agadata. It's feeling. So therefore, you can't have one without the other. You can't have the other without one. You need both. And then you read the Nevi'im. How much halacha is there in Nevi'im? Very little. Occasionally in the Gemara, they'll bring you a pasuk from Rus. You learn Khalif. You learn a little bit here. Midibrei Kabbalah you learn. You learn Muksa. The pasuk of the Yeshayo, you learn Muksa. V'daber Davar. You learn how to speak. Dibura Masurim, etc. But most... What? It's called Dibrei Kabbalah. That's what the Nevi'im is called. But almost all of Navi is agadata. What's agadata? It's giving you musr, and it's exhorting you to do to greater deeds. And you see Yeshayo. Or what does he say to the Jewish people? He says to them, you know, you might be, what is it? And there are many psukim in the Navi. But it says, first of all, one of the problems with the Jews is that they were bringing korbanos. They were doing it exactly right. They learned zvachim, they learned menachs, they learned me'ilah, they learned erchim, they learned all of the kachim. There was no heart. no heart. What does it mean? That's exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Jewish people. And if you're only doing the Bein Adam Makom, you're not doing the Bein Adam L'Chaveiros. Also, what's it worth? So the Nevi'im, we're constantly getting... So Nevi'im is all based on a Gadda. So a Jew really needs both. Now, in Yeshiva, basically what we're trying to do is we're trying to give you... Everybody already has a taste for a Gadda. Everybody has a taste for a Gadda. So we don't really have to give you that so much. You're going to get that even when you go back. Everyone likes a good drasha, a nice word. But Halacha, most people cannot appreciate unless they've learned Halacha in depth and they can begin to taste the beauty and the depth. They're able to see the depths of learning Halacha and Gemara Biyun. So therefore, in Yeshiva, mostly we're trying to give you that. However, I feel very strongly that in many places, not enough of the stress is put in a Gadata. And then, because of that, people are missing a lot in their own heart. And I feel that in myself. When I learn too much Halacha, so everything in my spiritual world stems from here, right? So there's a lacking there, because you know you're sitting in your davening, right? You're sitting in your davening, and your mamash have the greatest kasha in the davening, and then you start analyzing the davening. You're not there to analyze; you're there to feel when you daven, right? So therefore, when you're too much of a stress on your brain, then your heart suffers. When you only have heart, so there are Jews even today, who we've all seen. I don't have to identify them by name of groups and stuff, but there are Jews who put such a stress on feeling, that I did an alto and soprano, that they forget about deeds, they forget about actions. And you should know that in Jewish history, almost every great gadol, and was every great philosopher, not every great philosopher was also a gadol in halacha. Rambam was a great philosopher, he was a gadol in halacha. What's his name? Yehuda Levi talks about halacha. He's considered he's a Rishon in Kuzari. So he was a philosopher in halacha. It's the Arizal. Kabbalah. Kabbalah is a Gadata. Kabbalah is feeling. Right? The Arizal is quoted in the Shita Mekubetzis. In the Shita Mekubetzis, you know the halacha. Shita Mekubetzis in Gemara, the Arizal was a great Talmud Chacham. One doesn't go without the other. Right? You know, even in our door, Soloveitchik was a great halachist. But he was also, his doctor was in philosophy. Right? I wouldn't have understood it if I'd have read it, but they say it was in philosophy. Some Rav Cohen, with Herman Cohen, something like that. I'll go upon him, but so you really need both. And today, there's some people who are great. I'm always very suspicious when you see somebody who's talking a lot about a Gadata, and they're not Lamdanim, and they don't know how to learn. Usually such people are going off the Derech. Because the Halacha is what keeps you on the Derech, right? If a person has a lot of heart, the Halacha is what keeps them on the Derech. The second a person doesn't have Halacha, so you should become very, very, very suspicious and wary, and I personally cannot learn any agadat or anything from anybody who I don't hold as a big Talmud Chacham in halacha, because I know there's going to be something wrong. And it also goes vice versa. If you see somebody who's only halacha, and they're such a great lamdin, right? But when it comes to feeling, you see the way they daven, and you see the way they act, and you see that their spiritual world is lacking, so I'm not saying you should be critical of them, but I wouldn't run to them to be their Talmud either, because you really have to combine both. So there was a great rabbi who lived. He died in 1935. Why is 1935 a big year?
World War II.
What?
Starting World War II.
I was trying to think who won the World Series that year. But we'll say Lou Gehrig was playing. Lou Gehrig was already playing by then, right? So that was a very important year for the New York Yankees, 1935. So Rav Kook died in 1935. Rav Kook was very unique in that he was an absolute genius in halacha. When he was in Velazhny, he was called an Ilui, the Ilui from Boisk. Now, when you're in Velazhny, that's like going to MIT and being called the genius of MIT, right? Velazhny was the mother of all yeshivas, and he was one of the greatest geniuses in Velazhny, right? So if you go to MIT and you're called the genius of MIT, so therefore that's something else, right? In Velazhny, even if you were called a half a genius, it was something, right? They said it was one half a genius. He ended up like being one of the biggest Rosh Yeshivas alive, right? But in Velazhny, they only called him a chatzi iloi, a half a genius, because to be called a whole genius. So Rav Kook in halacha was unbelievable. And people were made. And when they came to see him, he any sugi they would talk about with him, immediately, anywhere in Shas, he'd immediately say, oh, the Gemara says like this, and he would start going through the Shitas Rishonim, and he would discuss, the Mam is Shas and Poskim Kol. Right, when he was in Yeshiva over there, you know, they've legend, he didn't even know the name of the guy. He's there for like 10 years, he didn't know the name of the guy who sat next to him on the bench. He didn't know his name. He was busy learning, right? That's on one hand. He was a brain. There's no question about it. He was a brain that the Jewish people have not seen. Very, very unique brain. On the other hand, he was also a soul. He was also a spirit. When he was a little boy, this is one of the stories about him that most impresses me. When he was a little boy, he testifies about himself. Now we get back to Christianity. I don't know why today we're talking a lot about Christianity, but somehow we got onto it. Maybe it's because we're near the mosque. all the same nonsense. So the he said that when he walked by a church, even if there were delicious like aromatic flowers planted around the church, it smelled like a toilet bowl to him. That's what he said. He could smell tumah and tahara. He knows he walks by a church. He says he smelled it. And there are many, many stories about him, about his, you know, his, from the time he was 9 years old, he never looked at a woman. 9 years old, he realized when he's nine, I guess he realized a woman's a woman, a man's a man, right? He never looked again at a woman, right? He was not a man who was very interested in Olam Hazeh. You know, people often portray Rav Kook as a person, he's like the sort of modern rabbi, you know, wore a tiny little kippah, you know, he wore sandalim, he had a shovel, and occasionally, if you needed a kula and halachas, so you went to Rav Kook. But it wasn't like that at all. Rav Kook, just dumb, to give you an example of his psak in halacha, is that they asked him about women voting. Women voting. Today, of course women vote. Right? Rav Kook paskin, women shouldn't vote. What are you paskin? He said a woman's place is in the home. What did he say? He said the man is supposed to be out in the outside world doing, and the woman, and that's the kedusha of the Jewish home. Right? Rav Kook paskin, where Rav Kook was against women learning Torah. Right? People say that, oh yeah, women have to learn. Right? Rav Kook didn't think that was a woman's job. So one, he was very, very strong in halacha, and he was very strong into spirituality, and therefore his books afterwards, what he became famous for, besides he has many books of Pesach, but he became famous for his books on Jewish thought and agadat and feeling. So many of his books are very abstract, up in the air. However, there's one book of his, one set of books that he wrote that I think would everybody can benefit from, and that's why I thought, at least we'll try and see how it goes, that everybody can benefit and learn this book. And he wrote a parish called Ein Ayah. Ein Ayah is like, it's after Ein Yaakov, right? So it's Ein. And Ayah is his initials, Avram Yitzchak Cohen. So he wrote a book, a parish on Agadata. On Agadas Chazal, he brought together all the stories, and then he wrote a parish on the stories. So unfortunately, I only got to the middle of Shabbos. They just put out the last volume, but they had a manuscript, and that's all we have from him. So we have many other books from him. We have, you know, 25, 30, 40 books from him. But in what's it called? In Agadas Chazal, where he goes Keseder, one by one, with all the Agadas, we only have one book. So, therefore, I thought it would be kedai to learn it. And really, what he does in these Agadas is, he doesn't just ask Akasha, and then it's a nice word. And every single one of them, he either teaches you how to live your life, because that's what Torah is, the word Torah, what does the word Torah mean? Teaching, Torah is Chaim, it's supposed to teach you how to live. So therefore, just if somebody says a nice idea, but it doesn't have anything to do with your life, it's meaningless. I had the famous Kutzker Rebbe. Kutzker Rebbe used to say that if you go to a woman and you say to her, Harei HaMekudeshes, you say it 1,000 times, and you invite the band, and you order all the food, and there are 500 guests there, and you have the rabbis, and you have the witnesses, and you say Harei HaMekudeshes, it's all meaningless. Until you say which word?
Li.
You have to say to me. So the Kutzker Rebbe said the same thing in Torah. If you learn Torah, and there's no Li, and you don't ask what this has to do with me in life, then you didn't learn. The Ramban says every time you get up from your sefer, finish seder, whatever you're learning, he says, what did I learn? What did this teach me about living my life? Right? There's a lesson in everything. And you just know, in general, that even when you learn halacha, there's always philosophy, there's always some sort of agada behind the halacha. That's what Rav Kook says in one place, and it's true. Every halacha that we have, there's always going to be an agada, a philosophy behind the halacha. And you have to ask yourself, what is the philosophy behind this halacha? Right? Why does the Torah want it to be specifically this way? Right? That's getting into Tamei Mitzvahs. That's what Tamei Mitzvahs are all about. It's the Rambam, Mor Nevuchim, the third book of Mor Nevuchim. He talks about, for example, a carbon. What are we bringing a carbon for? We have to kill an animal for it. Chop off its head, and you burn it. Delicious. What do you have to do that for? It's the Svarim all talk. And when you look at a carbon, who are you supposed to see on the Mizbeach?
Yourself.
Yourself! Beautiful! Better yourself than myself. It's more beautiful. Less beautiful for me if it's myself. Agobanim, you're supposed to see, Hashem. You're supposed to see your own self on the Mizbeach. And you're supposed to say, that should be me! Barakadosh Baruch Hu has Rachmanis on you. So when you look at it that way, that it should be you, Barakadosh Baruch Hu has Rachmanis, it changes your attitude. So Barakadosh Baruch Hu, I must have done some real averis here. Or alternatively, you're giving something that's yours, some very expensive, nice animal, and you're saying, Barakadosh Baruch Hu, I want to give it to you. I'm giving something of mine, and I'm giving it all to you, Barakadosh Baruch Hu. If it's an Ola, it's all to Barakadosh Baruch Hu. If it's a Shalom, it's otherwise. Right? So that's another idea of a carbon, but each carbon has a philosophy, but each mitzvah has a philosophy behind it, and also agadah is also so. That every time you see an agadata, you'll see what are the halachic ramifications going to be. And there are very few people who are able to combine the worlds. Most books are either wholly dedicated to halacha or wholly devoted to halacha. There are few people who mastered, or Putner is one example of somebody He has a set of Sfarim called the Pachad Yitzchak, where he was able to combine the two and incorporate halacha into agada, and agada into halacha, and lamdas into philosophy, and kabbalah into lamdas, and he brought them all together. But very few people were able to do that. Rav Kook was somebody who was able to do that. So therefore I thought we would learn. Now, just a note about the shiur. For anybody who's interested, Mirtz Hashem, for a couple of weeks, B'li Neder, if we have, I'm going to make copies. And then, for those who want, you can get your own books, and this way, you'll have it for yourself, and it's kedai to have. You can get it at most good Zionist bookstores. Now, Manny's, Mariah, I don't know if they sell them in all the bookstores in Neisharim, but you can get it, and it's kedai to have. Now, just a general note about the yeshiva. There's a custom in Yeshiva HaKotel for many years, even though it's not Yeshiva HaKotel anymore, but it has been a custom in Yeshiva HaKotel, that people go to a shir, and they stick with it for a very short period of time, and then they drop out. And people generally spend the whole year dropping in and out of shiur. So that unfortunately even applies to morning seder, but it also applies to afternoon and evening seder. So I'm not saying this about my shiur in particular, but in general, if you want to get the most out of your year, it's kedai to see what works for you, and then stick with it. So for the beginning, you know, you want to feel around a little bit and see what works for you, so that's fine. But in general, if you want to have a successful year, you pick a class. Let's say you go to Rav Weiss's Musar classes at night, and you say, I'm going to stick with it in thicker and thin. Right? And that's the way to get out of it. But to take a little bit here and a little bit there, you're not going to get very much out of your year. And that's generally what people do. Now, as far as me, you know, they don't give you bonuses in the yeshiva if you have more people or less people in your shir. So I'm not really necessarily interested in having 500 people. But what I am very, very interested in is having people who are going to come every week. So that could be one person, and that person can even be me. But I want at least that there should be one. Now, if that happens, then maybe I'll find something else to learn. I'll go find out that there should be at least one person who's devoted and coming every week. It'll be worth it for you. Even that one person. This is nobody. There's nobody. But even one person. But if there are going to be people who are going to drop in and out, it's not so kedai for me and it's not so kedai for you. Now, another note, in general, I'm a little bit of a...
Wild adjectives here.
Great.
Not elastic. That's another word for elastic.
Rigid.
Flexible.
Got to live in America sometimes. You can learn English. Or Canada. Flexible. I'm flexible. If there's a group of guys, not necessarily at this time spot, but if there's a serious group of guys who want to learn some safer or some topic, yes, and they want to stick with it, so those are the type of men I'm looking for. So you can tell me, I mean, if you're interested in me in particular, and we can learn. Like, for example, for this year, I had a million different ideas of what I wanted to do. But I thought that this would be the best idea. But in general, if there are people who are interested in a specific topic, and they're going to stick with it, in other words, I'd rather have something that I want to learn less, but people are interested, than something that I want to learn more, and people aren't interested. So therefore, we have approximately 20 minutes to learn, but I'm going to take one or two of those minutes to do something, and then we're going to actually get to the text. We're going to learn a little bit of Agadata, and then we'll call it an evening. Yes, Rav Shmuel?
Are you going to only use in Rav Kook? Are you going to be looking like maybe Balmagan or other?
So what's interesting also about Rav Kook in general is that he is a cocktail party. He takes all of the different sources, the Rambam and the Vilna Gaon, from Kabbalah and Tarashi and Tosis, and he basically brings them all together. So in general, our main text will be this Sefer. However, B'li Neder, I will be Ma'ayan also in other sources. You know, a lot of his stuff is also based in the Ma'aral. I personally will be Ma'ayan in other sources, and see what in Hasidic sources also, and see what they say in the Agaditas, and be able to incorporate that in the Shir. But as far as the text, we're going to be using this as a text. And so if you'll just excuse me, I'm very sorry, for 1 minute, and then anybody who still wants to learn will learn for a few minutes in Agadita, and you'll get a little taste of it, and then hopefully we'll continue next week.
And if the lights go on when I'm gone, then we'll be able to see. Oh, okay, a lot of books in the corner.
Huh? It's paused.
Push pause.
No, now you're starting it again. It's pause now. Just pause again.
Hope you have a good aim. You go on listen for
it. How do you pause this?
Yeah, thank you.
I know, it's not late.
Just stop.
No, that's stopping it.
No. Then I guess we'll just let it go.
This year we'll probably be every Monday.
Shut up.
Last week what they did was they made everybody go to one, right? Let's say one night, so everybody who tried out, and the next week it's a different guy, and the next week goes to the third guy, and then you know which one you want.
You wake up and the cheer is not going on. You take a 2 minute break when you wake up. Did you say it?
Is it taking something?
Yeah, look at you making faces.
Are you
taking a lot of drinking?
Just for the record,
they are.
So at night, for shut up,
I lay my own with the
next.
How
would
I
say?
First
person
came to my mind, or you're going to
Yeah, by the way, guys, Yankees did not win the World Series in 1945.
It is a mess.
That's the day we're going to
go. Right, 6 o'clock.
And Lou Gehrig, I think, retired with that also. Maybe dead.
Richie?
Good night.
There's no more joking around.
Jack's
It's off. Gentlemen, Rabbi Yochanan got sick. Maybe we'll close the door. Rabbi Yochanan got sick. So we want to wish Rabbi Yisrael here, wishes Rabbi Yochanan or Refuah Shleimah. Rabbi Yochanan got sick. It's Gemara and Brachas, Daf Hey. All the Gabe Reb Chanina. Rabbi Chanina went to visit him. Amalei, chavivin alecha isurim? He said to him, do you like being ill? Do you like physical pain? So he said to him, Amalei, what does a true tzaddik say?
Yes, it's kapara nesachim.
It's very important to shake your hands like this, yeah? He says to him, listen to what he answers him. Listen to what this holy man answers him. He says to him, Amar Lei, he's Gemara and Brachos, not making it. Amar Lei, Lohein Velo Scharan. I don't like the Yisurim, and I don't like the Schar for the Yisurim. I'm not interested. No, thank you. So the Gemara ends off. He says, Amar Lei, so the other rabbi, Rabbi Hanina, said to him, Havli Yadach, give me your hand. Yahavle Yadeh, he gave him his hand, and he put two Tylenols in, and he closed his hand. And Ivle Yadeh gave him his hand, V'ukme, what does V'ukme mean? He stood him up, the old, holy man, getting the sick man out of bed, and then he was able to, run a marathon after.
That sounds like one of those Christian shows, later.
Exactly. Woo! So let us, for a moment, analyze this Agadic text. I have a few questions. You can add your own. First of all, it sounds a little bit funny, which we alluded to before, that a rabbi wouldn't want Yisurim. It's good for you in this world, Yisurim. The other question I have is, what is the significance of give me your hand? Why didn't he just heal him? Why does he need his hand to heal him? If he can heal him spiritually, he doesn't need a hand to do it. Yes? So those are my two questions on this Gemara.
With blood, at least, all of this is just about to happen in the Midbar. All of them need some sort of physical...
Right, why the hands, though? In Achinami, why the hands? He didn't say he had a handache.
Well, if he took his head and hit him with it, that would be weird.
Well, he doesn't have to hit his head. Put his hand on his head. I don't know. Now, so Rav Kook says the following. What is the purpose of Yisurim? Everybody here has suffered Yisurim. Yisurim doesn't necessarily have to be, God forbid, a person has Chmana Leslan, a horrible disease. Yisurim even means that, you get stuck in a traffic jam. It's not Yisurim. Yisurim even means that, you go down to supper and, there's food for you to eat, but after what you wanted is all gone. Yisurim could be anything. Yisurim means somebody woke you up. Not Yisur, have a nice nap, and all of a sudden somebody woke you up. Yisurim is anything. And then in this world, there are more serious Yisurim. Right? What is the purpose of Yisurim Shel Ava? Right? In other words, a person who's already had kapara for all their sins. Right? And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives something called Yisurim Shel Ava. He gives them pain, which, I don't know if we're on the Madrega yet to have that, but he gives them pain just because he loves them. What do you think the purpose is?
They don't have to have punishment in the next world.
But that's all done.
It's all done. They've already, anything they've, any avera they've ever done, they've already had enough yisurim. We have a great tzaddik who's been suffering. So all of his averas, all of his two averas that he's done in his whole life have already been atoned for. And now you're just giving him yisurim, yisurim shalom. What do you say, Yehuda?
So we can grow in this world.
So we can grow in this world. In other words, a person with his own means can only reach a certain level. And then it gets to the point where it's much, much harder to sort of go beyond yourself. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu does a very big favor. He sends a person yisurim, which is like an easy way to overachieve, so to speak. It raises him spiritually, because that's what yisurim is supposed to do. In other words, it takes your physical body, and you suffer a little bit, and it's supposed to make you a more spiritual person. What a person would have trouble doing on their own, yisurim accomplishes for him. Right? You see that all the time in this world. You see that when a person, I mean, even on a more simple level, when it's not yisurim shalava, that what a person wasn't able to achieve spiritually, when he was well, when he was sick, he reached amazing heights. Right? You hear all these Holocaust stories. That people were suffering so much, and through the yisurim, they became so much holier, and they became so much higher, and you know, they were able to, you know, keeping mitzvahs, you know, it's much harder to keep mitzvahs when you have yisurim than when you don't have yisurim, right? But mostly yisurim, even just sitting there, and accepting the yisurim, that in itself raises a person spiritually, yeah.
You said that, like, what I'm saying, it's like, it's great, it would be, for the first tzaddikim to say, like, you know, it's great for the yisurim, so like, I grow and whatnot, but by not enjoying it, or not seeing that light, don't you get more scarred because it's worse for you?
By not seeing that, it comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Or, no, but not saying, okay, by just, if you're suffering, the more you're suffering, the more scar you'd be getting, huh?
No. So the Gemara says you only get it if you appreciate that it's from Hashem. But if a person gets suffering and then he just says, I hate this, and he doesn't see it as coming from God, and he doesn't become a more spiritual person, then it's wasted. And that's really the most tragic thing. When a person suffers, and he doesn't grow spiritually in any way, and he just becomes less of a spiritual person, then that's the greatest, what's it called? But most people who are suffering become more spiritual people. You know why? Because they don't have any more body to deal with. Usually people who are very wealthy and they, you know, they're healthy and wealthy, so they're able to focus on their body and they don't need spirituality, so to speak. But people who are suffering, they're really able to focus on their spirituality because they don't really have a body to focus on. So then they're able to put all their energies into their soul. But here we're talking about an even higher level. We're talking about somebody who's all of his sins have already been and he already is a spiritual person. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu does him a big favor. He sends him all of this pain. And what would have been almost impossible for him to achieve through his own efforts, he's able to achieve now through these yisurim. Through HaKadosh Baruch Hu sending him pain, and him saying, thank you HaKadosh Baruch Hu for this pain, which is the hardest thing to do. Almost. Yes?
Maybe the reason why he has to use his hands, because you see that the hands are like the beginning connecting point between the you and God. Like when you wake up in the morning, you're coming during the night, you know, depending on whether so when you come back down, what's when the subject is only at the hands?
Yeah.
Why? Because getting a point, connect to Hashem.
You're saying a very good thing. You just put a very good idea into my head, and what you're saying is very important. So this is so we'll say now. He's like this. He asked him, Chaviv and Alecha Yisurim. What do you mean, Chaviv and Alecha Yisurim? It means that you're going to be able to reach great spiritual heights through these Yisurim. So you like that? Right? That's what yisurim are there for. A person is supposed to have pain in order to become a holier person. So he says, lo hein v'lo schar. I don't want the yisurim. I don't want them. You know why? Because I don't want their schar. Why don't I want the schar of yisurim? And this is Rav Kook's point. What? I'd rather do it. You know what? Wait with the chairs, okay? Just wait with the chairs. Say it because it'll just interrupt. Thank you. You know why? Because it'll ruin everything. Because if HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives me a gift, then it's not the same as if I work hard on my own. That's what he was saying. Lo hein velo scharen. There's a story that he tells over here when we're cooking his parish. He says, the Gra, it's a famous story. A Malach appeared to the Gra, and he said, yo, let's learn Chavrusa. What would you do? A Malach comes and he says, let's learn with Chavrusa. That's a great Chavrusa, right? He can tell you everything, right? It's almost as good as having Chavrusa with Rafana, right? Everything right in front of you will explain it to you, everything will be clear, it's Kabbalah. So the Gra says, no. I'd rather do it on my own. And that's something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu implanted in every one of us. You see it in children very much. You know? Like, I would love it if people serve me all the day, hand and foot. You know, I could sit at the table with a book and somebody would sit and feed me. Somebody would do everything for me. But my kids, they want to do everything on their own. And we get into a car, my four-year-old says, I want to drive. Right? They want to do it all on their own. Right? So the answer, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu put that in, why did he instill that in a person, implant that in a person? Because that's really the end. That's really what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to have that feeling in this world that we want to do it all on our own. That we don't want to help, we don't want to have help from the outside world. We want to think things through. We want to work hard. You know, if a person would say, almost everybody, it's an amazing thing, say to somebody, you don't have to work a day in your life. Right? And we're just going to keep loading you with money. So the loading you with money, most people wouldn't have a problem with. But never to have to earn anything on their own, most people would be, those are the most miserable people in the world. Because a person wants to work hard and feel that he did it on his own. Right? Why is that? So everything we have in this physical world also has a deeper spiritual purpose. And that deeper spiritual purpose is that in order that we should want to get it on our own, right? It's a famous story in the 1950s. There was a kid, the Stipler tells about in his Sefer. There was a kid who was born without the Malach giving him a little whack. He didn't have that little thing up above his lip. And he knew Kol HaTorah Kula. And the Gedolim davened that he should forget it. He's miserable. He's not going to be able to work it out on his own. It was all given to him as a gift. When you do it on your own, that's really the goal of this world. That a person should work. What does the Pasuk say? Adam la'omel yulad. A person's here to toil. He's not here that it should come to you. He's here to toil. So he said, Yisurim will catapult me. But I don't want to be catapulted. It's too easy. It's too easy. A little bit of a broken arm. I'd rather work hard. So he said to him, Lo hein velo schar, and I don't want the Yisurim, I don't want their reward. So what did the other rabbi? He said, I understand exactly what you mean. Havli yadach. What does havli yadach mean? Give me your hand. What does hand symbolize?
Work.
Deeds, actions, right? That's why in the morning, first we put tefillin shel yad, and then tefillin shel rosh. Tefillin shel yad symbolize all of our actions, and when we put on tefillin shel rosh, we're supposed to say all of our actions that we're doing today at Kodesh Baruch Hu will be devoted to you. And then our seichel, we put tefillin on our brain. Right? Incidentally, they just had a big thing. They had an article in a Chinese medicine journal that they were publicizing here in Israel that the acupuncturists say that the two places on the human body that purify one's thoughts and raise one's spirituality are right over here and right over here. So the guy read an article in the religious newspaper, he said, and also all the points down here. So, I don't know all the points, but a number of the points down the arm. So he says, maybe we should give goyim, you know, tefillin also, because to pressure those points, they also need to be purified, without the parashas, of course, right? But what are we doing? We're saying we put on tefillin in the morning, first I go to Baruch Hu Naaseh. First I do deeds. My arm. All of my deeds are dedicated to you. And then nishma, and then I put on my brain, then I'm going to be able to understand. But first come the deeds. So the hands symbolize a person's deeds. So he says, hab li yada, give me your hand. What does it mean, give me your hand? It means I understand that you want to work hard to achieve great heights. And that's when he healed him. He saw that if he didn't want the Yisurim, if the Yisurim weren't achieving their goal, then they're worthless. They're meaningless. Right? Sometimes you see in this world, like a brother gives a person Yisurim, right? And sometimes it allows him to changes his life. Because it gives him a totally new perspective. Other times a Kaddish Baruch Hu gives somebody Yisurim, and he ignores them. So he goes to the right doctor. The doctor is able to heal him. And then a person doesn't change. Right? I've known people like that. They have terrible diseases. It happens all the time. Right? And then they're willing to change. They're willing to do anything. You know the story about the woman on the beach? Yeah, forgive me for telling you this story. There's a woman, and she takes her grandson to the beach. How are they going to a mixed beach? She was blind, right? Anyway, so she's on the male side, right? And the kid's drowning. The kid she sees, far away, the kid is drowning. No, oh, my son is drowning, he's drowning!
She sees the kid.
Blind
glasses,
yeah.
Alright, she's not blind. Anyway, that's in Kashi. The young Kashi in the Gemara, not in me.
So the
kid's drowning. She starts screaming to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Oh, Hashem! Please save my grandson! If you save my grandson, I promise I'll give $10,000 to Yeshiva's Nativa Aryeh. I had to update the story. I'll give $10,000 to Yeshiva's Nativa Aryeh, and I'll start going to Shul on Shabbos, and I'll start being more Makbet HaNech Mezazorchim, etc., etc. She makes all that. You just bring back my grandson exactly as I left him, exactly as he was when he came out onto the beach. I could have brought all, do all those things to you. I promise, please save him. Anyway, the big muscular guy with the great suntan, he's called the lifeguard, so he comes out, he brings the kid back. And the kid is saved. Oh, she sees her son. Oh, Hashem, he's still alive. She gives him a big hug. She says to Mama, my Yankalo, I'm so glad I have you back. Oh, oh, and she gives him kisses. Oh, thank
you.
Wait a second. Wait a second. When you went out to the water, you were wearing your baseball cap. You're not wearing your baseball. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I said to you that if you bring him back exactly as he is, then I'll give money to stock and I'll keep Shabbos and Tetra all the mitzvahs I promised to do. But he's not exactly as he was. He went out with his baseball cap. His baseball cap got lost at sea. Right? See, so what happens? A person has, he's willing. But then all of a sudden, he gets back what he thinks. Things go back to the way they were, so he doesn't change. Right? So such a person, sometimes the Kodesh Baruch Hu says, I don't know, Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't talk to me usually. But we know that, what we understand, Kodesh Baruch Hu saying to the person, Chaval. Chaval Alecha. I see Yisurim didn't help you. If that didn't change your life, nothing did. And your mamash, you're a lost cause. There's certain people like that. You're a lost cause. So therefore, that's what Yisurim are supposed to do. I don't know how we got into that old story. But the point of this Gemara is, Havli Yadach. Give me your hand. Give me your hand, meaning that I know that's an easy way out of all of Yisurim. And of course Yisurim are going to change me. And of course I realize that the Yisurim are coming from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So he wasn't kicking back at Hashem and saying, oh, I don't want your pain, I hate being sick. No, he was saying, I know I'm going to achieve spiritual heights through being sick, but I'd rather do it on my own. Havli Yadach. So we gave him his hand, and he raised him. Now, what Yechiel, he made a good point, is that why do we wash? Now we can also understand better. We were talking about what the hands do. Why we wash in Philistine, why dafka the hands? Because your hands are impure. Why not your whole body? So it could be, the idea is that the hands symbolize all of our actions, right? What does Netilas Yadayim mean? Netilas Yadayim means literally raising your hands. You ever think about that? We don't say Rechitzas Yadayim. Netilas Yadayim means you're raising your hands. What does it mean to raise your hands? So raising your hands means, it could mean, that all that you're doing is raised. It's towards Shemayim. That all of your deeds, all of your actions are going to be towards Shemayim. So one of the things that it says in Poskim, one of the reasons we do Netilas Yadayim first thing in the morning, is we're supposed to be like Kohanim, who are starting the Avod in the Beis HaMikdash, we're serving in Kodesh Baruch Hu, just like the Kohanim, any real Kohanim over here? Daniel HaKadosh? HaKohen? Who else? Rafael Chaim. Rafael Chaim. You know, it's interesting, because his brother, both of his brothers were in Yeshiva, and they also both claimed to be Kohanim. So I guess it's a believable story. Anyway, so what point am I trying to make? So you're starting off your day and you're saying, Kodesh Baruch Hu, I'm raising my hands. Meaning just like an Alkohol in the Beis HaMikdash also does Netilas Yadayim, because all of his avod is clearly special to you because he's living in the Beis HaMikdash. So too, everything I do today will be, I don't know how that works with the Tumah aspect, but those who say related to the Kohanim, what it would mean is that everything I'm going to do today is raised towards you, so to speak. So that is what he says about this Agadah. And I see we have 3 minutes, so we'll just give you one more taste, and then we'll call it a day. It says later on in the Gemara, Tanya, Avin Yamin Omer, Shnaim Shenichnetzu L'Spala, B'Kodem Echam L'Spala, V'Lohim Dim L'Chaver. Two people go into Davin, and one of them doesn't wait for his friend. Tarfin Lo Tfilasa B'Fanav. So they rip up his tefillah in front of him. So in the olden days, right, it used to be a sakana. Not only in the olden days, even today, right, a person's going, what?
That's what they added.
So a person's going, he's davening in the young Israel of Spanish Harlem. So you and your friend, he's getting close to Shkia, right? It's 2 minutes before Shkia, right? And you and your friend are in the young Israel of Spanish Harlem. And Abba Binyamin tells you that if you go into daven and you finish before your friend and you don't wait for him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu rips up your tefillah. So the obvious question is, what does one thing have to do with the other? The fact that you daven, you did the right thing, you daven. And now that you left without your friend, so it wasn't so nice of you, you should have waited for him. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu will get you on that, like we know. The Sfarim teach us that if a person does a million averes, but he does a mitzvah, when he gets up to Shemayim, he gets for that mitzvah. You get tzchar for that mitzvah. And if a person does, unless HaKadosh Baruch Hu has reason not to, but in general, everything, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu mekapeh eschar kol beria, that if a person has a schus, then that schus can last him for a lifetime. There's a story about the Chafetz Chaim, he once saw a rich guy or something, or some guy who had a lot of success in life. He said, who knows, maybe once in his life, he said, I'm ein yesh me'rabba with kavanah. So every mitzvah counts. So he did a mitzvah, and he did an avera, and what does one have to do with the other? You see a Jew, sometimes the way I try to look at secular Jews, I see chayalim sometimes. So kosher they're probably not keeping. Tefillah, I don't know if they're keeping the, I don't know if they're davening before or after the Zman, right? But they're guarding Jewish people. It's a big schus to be able to guard Jewish people. It's a big mitzvah. So therefore they have averus, but they also have mitzvahs. Right? So what does one have to do with the other? So the answer is, Rav Kook says, is that they're really related. Why, if a person doesn't wait for his friend after davening, is his tefillah ripped up? What does one have to do with the other? The answer is, what is davening all about? What are you doing when you're davening? Who are you davening for? Yourself? Everybody. Everything we daven is b'lashon rabbin. Because when you're davening, when you're saying Rafeinu, you don't only want your Aunt Henny to have a refuah shleima. You want all Jewish people to have a refuah shleima. When you daven for parnasa, barich aleinu Hashem Elokeinu, you don't only want your father to have parnasa. You want everybody's father to have parnasa. You want everybody to have. You want all Jews to have parnasa. Why not? Everybody should have. So you're really davening for everybody, right? So let's say a person davens and he doesn't think about his friend. He just leaves. What does that show about his davening? Well, he wasn't really davening. He only cared about himself. So if you're so selfish that you only care about yourself, your davening's not a davening. Your davening must not be worth. So Rav Kook says that it shows, as Gemara is teaching us, that it shows that if you leave and you show a lack of sensitivity and caring for your friend, it must be that your davening wasn't worth much either. So therefore, with your davening, Kadosh Baruch Hu goes right up to Shemayim, goes, and it's all finished. HaKadosh Baruch Hu grows it back. And in the greatest letterman custom, the glass goes, psh! Right? They still do that. And therefore, no care, no tefillah. That was the olden days, Rabbi said. So Mirtz Hashem, we should all be zoiche to not have Yisurim, to be able to reach great spiritual heights, to reach the peak on with our own avoda, and that we should care about other people, and that should be expressed through our tefillah and through our actions. Have a great day, Rabbi Isaac. Thank you so much for coming.
Why would...